It's HPR, member supported Hawaii Public Radio, and all things considered. I'm Dave Lawrence, and we are thrilled to be spending some time with the guy that we had on the show last year. He was a whole lot of fun. It was his first appearance at the Blue Note Hawaii, Lee Ritenour. He's back at the Blue Note through Sunday. And look at that. He's spending some more time with us. How you doing? Good to see you, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us, and we're just glad to be back here. It's a great club, and of course, it's Hawaii. What are you going to say?
Right. That's what we were just saying. You can't argue when they book you there. Oh, we got to play Hawaii. Damn. So this time around, give a little plug for who's in the band. From what I understand, it includes a person with a special relationship to you, too.
Yeah. My son, Wesley Ritenour, is playing drums. He's 24 now. He's been around the world with me, literally, doing a whole bunch of other stuff, too. So I'm really proud of him. He's playing great. And you know, the interesting thing with drums is that your band is only as good as your drummer is. So I had the fortune and the good luck to work with some of the really the greatest drummers in the world. And, you know, Vinnie Colaiuta, Dave Weckl, Steve Gadd, Harvey Mason, all these fantastic legendary drummers, Sonny Emery, Will Kennedy, you know, it just, the list goes on and on, Chris Coleman, and so...
Big shoes for him to fill.
So it was funny, you know, Wes grew up since he was 5 years old playing drums, and he was around all these people, and for the longest time, you know, I had offered him a gig, and he said, no, Dad, I don't want to play in New York yet, you know, and... I said, what do you mean? No, you know. And he was very, you know, very serious about wanting to be ready. But he's been ready and playing incredible for a long time now.
Just talking about Wes, we flash back to you. At 16, there's not a lot of cats who, when you look at their resume or their bio online, I guess that's a better way of looking at it, that they would end up doing a recording session for what would be a major recording artist of the time, which was the Mamas and the Papas. And so 16 years old, like barely old enough to drive.
Well, I started playing when I was 8. By the time I was 12, I was totally immersed in it, totally serious, and told my dad I wanted to be a professional musician, whatever that meant, because we didn't know what that meant because none of us in the family were professional musicians. And yet I said, I want to do this for my life. I loved it so much. And so they were very encouraging, very helpful. And back in those days, in the mid-60s, late-60s, everybody was doing live gigs. You know, it was, you could do weddings, you could do bar mitzvahs. Everybody needed live musicians. So I was immersed in jazz, I was immersed in rock, blues, and you know, every field had, Segovia was there on classical guitar, so I was immersed in all of that. Pretty soon this group came along, and they were older than me, but somehow they had heard about me, and somehow they got turned on to John Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas, and they said, John's going to produce our demo. So we went up to Bel Air in Los Angeles and Beverly Hills there. It was right out of a storybook. It was this huge mansion, and we walk in, and it's this amazing studio. And we cut the demo for this group that I was in. The demo really never went anywhere, but John said, man, you play pretty nice. You want to hang out tomorrow night and play again? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we're doing a session for my group. And I said, you mean the Mamas and the Papas? And he said, yeah. He said, come on back tomorrow night. I came back, and sure enough, it was the Mamas and the Papas. And it was a young bass player at that time named Leland Sklar. Now, Leland Sklar went on to record and play bass on everybody's records, and drummer was Ed Green, who went on to record all the records for Barry White and Motown, and I think I was 16 and they were probably 19 or 20. And so I looked for that record for years and years, thinking, oh, I'm going to be on a Mamas, but I heard later that John Phillips would record every other day, and he just recorded all this stuff, and maybe the record someday made it out. I don't really know, but you know, it was in the resume, and it was very cool. And later I had my own studio at my house starting in 1985, and ever since I was 16 and I saw John Phillips' studio, I said, someday I'm going to have a studio in my house.
So in that way, it probably played a role.
Oh, big time.
How did you get it at 8? Who put the thing in your hand first at 8?
For some reason, I had this thing with the guitar when I was 5 or 6, getting a broomstick handle, putting a couple of nails, and stretching rubber bands. So the vibration of the string, somehow I like that. Okay. In the family, in the Ritenour family, we had one other professional musician. He was a bugler in the Civil War. And we actually have papers on that. And my grandmother played piano, my dad played piano, and the family loved music. So somehow it was in the blood. Fortunately, I had parents that just were all about encouraging it, so that was very cool.
I figured it had to be some kind of encouragement. Okay, final story also takes place as a teenager. You're backing Lena Horne and Tony Bennett at 18. So at 16, you've already heard this incredible story, the mansion, the studio that now makes him want to have his own studio. How do you end up with those cats?
Well, and I recommend this when I'm giving advice to parents about their kids and to young musicians that are coming out of college. You try to associate with other professional players just a little bit above you or a lot above you, and you try to hang out with those guys and get to know them, not just from a fan point of view, but really from a mentoring point of view. And there was this incredible jazz guitarist that I loved named Gabor Szabó. He was from Hungary, and he worked a lot with Lena Horne. He loved Lena, and Lena loved him, and she always featured the guitar up in her shows, and she was an amazing lady, not only gorgeous and way ahead of her time of cutting the racial barriers, just an amazing woman, real pioneer. And my mom and dad used to play records with Lena, so I knew her from an earlier age. The same thing kind of happened with me working with Peggy Lee when I was 18, and Gabor couldn't do a gig. I had been hanging out with him a little bit because I had met him at a club and he befriended me, and I went up and played with him at his house, and somehow he recommended me, and he couldn't do the gig, and he showed me the book, and I got the gig, and it was at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, which was at the time the big theater downtown Los Angeles. There was with an orchestra, and then turned out to be with Lena and Tony Bennett. And what I didn't know was that she featured the guitar so much is that the guitar was sitting on a, you know, I'm sitting on a stool pretty much next to Lena, you know, and talking about some stress, you know. But every young musician who prepares gets eventually that break. And you just have to be ready in your schooling, in your studies, in your practicing, in your all the homework you've done to deliver enough not to get nervous. You know, not to say that I wasn't nervous that night, but whenever the guitar was in my hands, because I had spent a lifetime playing it, then I was ready and I was going to make sure I delivered.
How many tunes did Tony do with you guys?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't remember, but I think he came out, I think it was almost half the show. I got to meet him that night, and then later I recorded on his records, and he's still phenomenal. And when Sinatra said that Tony was his favorite singer, it's like there's no joke about that, because Tony's been healthy and gigging. You know, he's like B.B. King, and I worked a lot with B.B. Those kind of guys, they tour until they drop, you know.
It's like it is in the genes with cats like that, huh? Especially Tony.
Yeah, oh, my God.
He's back at the Blue Note through Sunday. It's Lee Ritenour, and we have plenty of stories for the next visit, so we're going real slow into your catalog of stuff. Hope you had fun. Thanks for doing this.
We'll do that. Thank you, buddy. Hello, it's Lee Ritenour, and we're here right in the middle of our show with our friend Dave Lawrence. Aloha, Dave.